First of all, I would like to state that I don't have any disclosures. The funding source came from AHRQ. And I would like to acknowledge my co-investigators. And before I actually start talking about the grant and the research, I just wanted to just go over some common patient safety definitions so that you're aware of what I'm talking about. First of all, medical error is the failure of a planned action to be completed as intended, or the use of a wrong plan to achieve an aim. An adverse event is actually the injury that occurs as a result of the medical error, and it usually occurs from medical management rather than the underlying disease or condition of a patient. A preventable adverse event is an adverse event injury that could have been avoided as a result of an error or a system design flaw. And an ameliorable adverse event is an injury whose severity could have been substantially reduced if different actions or procedures had been performed or followed. Most medical errors do not actually result in medical injury. Some of them do, and those that do are actually termed preventable adverse events. And also, many of the adverse events are neither preventable nor ameliorable. This is actually my favorite figure. And in this figure, actually, I just wanted to illustrate the relationships between medical errors and adverse events. So as you can see, this large circle here are the medical errors. And as you can see, not all medical errors actually will result in an adverse event or an injury to the patient, which is right this box over here. And so these are the ones that do not actually, the medical errors that do not actually result in harm. But these here are the ones that can actually cause harm or injury. And so we are actually identifying adverse events, which is actually this box here. We're actually identifying preventable and ameliorable adverse events, which is the shaded area, which is the very critical ones, and then also the ones that are actually non-preventable and non-ameliorable. So for example, an unavoidable adverse event can occur when the patient is actually visiting a physician's office on an outpatient basis and actually is prescribed a medication for the first time. And but there's no prior record of that medication causing an injury to the patient, such as an allergic reaction from an antibiotic. So that would be an unavoidable adverse event. And also you have preventable adverse events. Now, if there was a history in the medical chart that the patient had been prescribed that medication in the past and had caused an allergic reaction, that would be a clear-cut preventable adverse event. So most of these adverse events actually occur because of discontinuities in care. And so we do have the healthcare system, which is a very complex system. And so what happens is that there's an interaction of numerous healthcare professionals within that system. These healthcare professionals actually have three burdens. The first is to deliver optimal care within a limited time frame. The second is to develop new skills and judgment abilities so that they can advance medical knowledge and technology. And the third one is to focus on cost-saving efforts. Now, all these three issues here create pressures for healthcare professionals to efficiently deliver optimal care. And that increases the potential for error, which usually happens between multiple and expedient handoffs. And that's when the system is most vulnerable, which increases the risk of medical errors and adverse events. In this figure here, so again, numerous professionals, discontinuities in care result from two major things: poor information transfer and faulty communication. Those result during handoffs, and those can actually occur during a hospitalization or after discharge from the hospital or even in the ambulatory care setting, and they result in medical errors and adverse events. So the grant, actually, so our first goal was to actually investigate post-discharge adverse events in adult patients discharged home from a hospitalist-run medical service of a community hospital with a large rural service area. So the first aim that we had is to identify the incidence of adverse events whether they were preventable, ameliorable, or neither of the two, and the timeliness of post-discharge ambulatory appointments. So the first hypothesis that we have is that there will be an increased rate of post-discharge adverse events in rural patients when we compare them to the urban population. The second specific aim is to identify the types of adverse events, such as drugs, infections, procedures, diagnostic errors, faults. And here we hypothesize that there will be an increased rate of drug events in all patients, both rural and urban. And the third and final specific aim is to examine independent associations with post-discharge adverse events in the two populations. So things such as patient characteristics, the presence of a primary care physician before hospitalization, and also if there's a scheduled timely post-discharge ambulatory follow-up appointment. And so several of these factors we are hypothesizing will be independently associated with the incidence of post-discharge adverse events. And so this is a 24-month prospective cohort study. We're collecting primary data, and the goal is to recruit about 295 urban and 295 rural patients that are actually discharged from the hospitalist service of the Tallahassee Memorial Hospital. And so the way the methodology occurs is that we have two nurses, research nurses, and what they do, they actually recruit patients from the hospital just before discharge. And what they do, they conduct a telephone interview about 3 or 4 weeks after discharge. And so when they conduct a telephone interview, they actually try to identify three explicit criteria. The first is if there's a new or exacerbated symptoms since discharge, if there has been an unplanned health services utilization since discharge, or if there are any abnormal laboratory test results since discharge. And so if they identify any of these, they triage these patients, the patients with a possible adverse event and the patient that does not have any adverse events. And so the second phase of the review is the records actually that have been placed in the category of possible adverse events. Those are the ones that are actually reviewed by two physicians, and they actually use their implicit judgment to actually identify if an actual adverse event has occurred or not. So in this slide, so far we have identified about 806 patients eligible. Of those patients, we have enrolled approximately 579. So actually, we are very close to reaching our 590 goal. And as you can see, the two groups are pretty much split 50-50%. And so the possible adverse event rate that we have identified, meaning possible is because we have not actually reviewed all cases to identify the adverse events. And so the possible rate is about 53% for the urban population and about 55% for the rural population. So slightly higher as we hypothesized, but not that much higher. So the cases that we have actually reviewed were 38 for the urban population and 38 for the rural population. And out of those cases, about 42% of those 38 cases have been actual adverse events for the urban population, and about 45 have been actual adverse events for the rural population. And as you can see, for the urban population, 8 of those are preventable, 2 are ameliorable, and 6 are neither of the two. And then for the rural population, 4 are preventable, 9 are ameliorable, and 4 are neither of the two. At the time of recruitment to the study, when the two nurses actually recruit patients at the hospital bedside, we actually conduct a patient survey. And so we actually collected some information, for example, such as, do you live by yourself? And as you can see, becoming for the urban population, it's more of a risk factor if they actually live by themselves to experience a possible adverse event rather than the rural population. In the rural population, it kind of seems to be slightly protected. So basically, rural patients are the ones that are actually healthier, are actually able to live by themselves. And as far as the education level, the rural population has a significant risk factor for experiencing a possible adverse event, more so than the urban population. And as far as the household income, it's the urban population that has a significant risk factor, more so than the rural population. So at the time of admission, these are some of the admission diagnoses that patients were actually admitted. Out of the patients, actually, they have a possible adverse event, and those that actually did experience an adverse event. And as you can see, cardiovascular diagnoses are actually the most common, followed by respiratory, neuro, and infectious disease. And that's actually pretty common for the ones that we have not reviewed yet, the possible adverse events, and for the ones that we have actually reviewed and have experienced actual adverse events. And so for discharge diagnosis, is pretty much the same. Again, cardiovascular, respiratory, and neuro are the top three. From the patients that we actually have interviewed, about 10% of those have been actually conducted with surrogates, and 90% have been conducted with the actual patient. And as far as reporting symptoms for patients with adverse events, as you can see, the most common reporting symptoms are actually neurologically related, followed by gastrointestinal, musculoskeletal, respiratory, and cardiac. So these are the most common categories of reporting of symptoms for patients with possible adverse events. The reporting of symptoms for patients with actual adverse events is, again, very similar. Neurologic symptoms are the most common, followed by gastrointestinal, musculoskeletal, integument, and cardiac. In this slide here, what we did, we actually examined the number of days between discharge and first follow-up appointment. And as you can see, the white bar illustrates those patients that have a possible adverse event. The orange bar illustrates those that do not have any adverse events. And the yellow bar indicates those that actually have an adverse event. And it seems that most of the patients that are deemed to possibly have an adverse event have actually seen their physician after discharge within the first week. And the same thing with those that did not experience an adverse event, about 30%. And most of the patients actually that did experience an adverse event saw their physician within the first week. In this table here, again, just to reiterate, we identified, we actually reviewed about 76 cases, 38 for the urban population and 38 for the rural population. And out of the 76 cases that we reviewed, 33 were actually adverse events. So we have a rate of about 43%. And most of these adverse events are actually drug-related, which is about 73%, which is followed by procedure-related events, which is about 7%, followed by therapeutic errors, which is about the same, 7%, and followed by diagnostic errors, about 4%, nosocomial infections, 4%, and surgical complications, about 4%. And so the preventable adverse events are about 16%. Of all the adverse events, and another 14% are ameliorable, but we have about 70% that are actually neither of the two. In this slide here, we have the frequently reported medication classes for patients that did experience a possible adverse event and also an actual adverse event. And as you can see, the most common drug classes are antibiotics, followed by anticoagulants and antiplatelets, followed by diuretics, beta blockers, and antiarrhythmics. then we have the duration of injuries in patients with adverse events. And as you can see, most of our patient population that experienced an actual adverse event had a duration of injuries that lasted for more than a week, about 73%. The severity of the injuries, the patients that did experience an adverse event, most of the population actually had mild effects of their ADLs and symptoms. About 22% had actually major effects on their ADLs. And health services utilization in patients with adverse events. 52% of the patients did not have any health services utilization at all, meaning they did not contact their physician, they did not visit their PCP, they did not even have a visit to the laboratory for blood draw, and they did not even have a readmission. But however, our readmission rate here is about 12%, and about 21% of the patients actually did actually visit their physician, and about 3% actually contacted their physician and didn't have to go in. So our readmission rate is about 12%, but again, we have a very small number here, only 33 cases, and by the time we're actually done reviewing all of the cases, we'll probably have about 300 cases or so. And so conclusions, our preliminary data suggests a 30-day post-discharge rate, which is comparable to previous studies and similar between urban and rural patients. While some risk factors for adverse events may be similar in rural and urban populations, other factors may affect the two populations differently. As in other studies, adverse drug events are the most common type of adverse events. And for implications, risk factors of post-discharge adverse events may be different between the two populations, and a better understanding of these risk factors may enable healthcare systems to identify patients at risk and provide tailored interventions to both populations, thus improving patient safety during transitions in care. Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions?
Yes.
Thank you. Actually, all of the patients are hospitalized,
right.
Yes, and we do recruit them at the time just before discharge.
What proportion of the discharge patients does this represent during that time frame? You have remarkable follow-up, and I'm thinking that maybe selected patients, certainly this isn't everyone, because the nurses recruited the patients in this population. So what proportion of your discharge patients?
Oh, I see, yes. Well, the hospital actually has about the, recruited patients from the hospitalist service only, which the hospitalist service actually discharges about 2,900 patients a year. So we have about 590, about 600 patients actually that we recruited within that year or so, yes. Sure. Any other questions? Yes?
Currently, there's a lot of interest in 30-day readmission due to Medicare punishing
utilizing
hospitals financially. And it would be interesting in later work to break out the portion that were actually readmitted as a result of an adverse event. Do you have any sense of how ballpark figure of how many of the adverse events are ones that resulted in rehospitalization?
Yes, absolutely. Well, our study is actually the second study in the U.S. The first study was actually published in 2003. It was actually at a Brigham and Women's Hospital in Boston, and they actually concentrated on the urban population. We're actually adding the rural population as well. Now, what they identified back in 2003 is that the rehospitalization rate was 24%. Yes, and so far we have about 12%, but I think we'll probably get closer to that 20% as well once we're actually done reviewing all of our cases. Yes? Some of the stuff we actually are going to examine, our third specific aim is to identify associations with these adverse events, so such as, for example, did they have a primary care physician before they were actually hospitalized? Other things could be like comorbidities, you know, like types of conditions that they actually had when they were in the hospital. And other things are, for example, when they left the hospital, did they actually have a timely follow-up with their physician? So, for example, they were told to follow up with their physician within a week or so. Did they actually do that? So those are the types of associations that we're going to be identifying. Now, with the readmission cases, of course, we're going to be looking at the types of adverse events that they had. So we're basically, the purpose is to identify specific risk factors, actually, that result in adverse events, and then hypothesize or strategize for the hospital interventions that we can actually, focus on to actually prevent these things from these bad outcomes, these adverse events from occurring. Yes. Yes, yes. Actually, most of the patients that we, out of the 33 cases that we had, about 27% actually, about close to a third actually, had actually seen their physician within the first week, which gives me an interpretation that, well, the injury, the adverse effects were serious enough that they actually had to see their physician within the first week. And then that would be one explanation. The other explanation would be, well, another 20% of the patients actually saw their physician within the first 2 weeks. So I guess the adverse effects were not as serious. They could wait until their appointment. So, but again, we're kind of, usually with the literature, actually, patients that actually do see their physician within the first week are the ones that should not be experiencing any adverse events. So we're again, it's preliminary information that we have right now. We're still, trying to review all the cases, but that's where we are right now. Yes, yes, absolutely. Now, what happens with post-discharge adverse events? They actually can occur. Most of them do occur during the hospitalization, but their effects are seen when they actually are discharged. And some of them actually, something bad happens, such as, for example, they have an abnormal lab results. Their blood is drawn, for example, in the hospital for a lab result. The lab result does not come back until the patient is discharged a week later and it's positive for something. And no one follows up with that. And that's when you have the adverse event. Thank you.